If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Testing. Okay. We are live. Hello, everybody. Sip of my coffee. It is a horrible old rainy day in Auckland today, and I hope the weather's maybe a bit better wherever you are. Okay, so this week, instead of a normal episode, we're going to have a Q&A. So where things are at the moment, yeah, there's a lot of stuff come in, and just sort of figuring out the process of how I'm going to release that and tell that story is still something I'm sort of figuring out. So a Q&A gives me a good extra week there just while that stuff's sort of being ironed out. And it's also good to answer some of your questions because, you know, there's a lot you probably want to know. And just while we start... yesterday morning was on the AM show, which is New Zealand's sort of main morning TV show, which was good. Shout out to them. They just out of the blue gave me an email and said, hey, love to get you on. So, you know, it's good to see sort of mainstream New Zealand media getting behind the podcast now and what's happening. So, you know, I certainly can't complain about that anymore. So that was good. And it was a basic interview, but... you know, it got things out there and that's what it's all about. Okay, so what we'll do is I've been given the list of all the questions on the Facebook group, and thanks to everyone that did that. And I'm just basically just going to go through these. I haven't really curated these or anything at this point. Let's just fire into it. So, sorry, burping. First one from Helen. Why doesn't the Russian help bring the truth to the surface? I'm sure he has the skills. Well, yes, the Russian. Maybe we should just get him and let him loose. I'm sure he'd love that. But yeah, I think we need to do things in a way that's probably not quite so violent. But yeah, I mean, hey, it would be one way to go about it. Tim, have you been able to formulate a theory that encompasses all the info, sightings, etc.? If so, when can we hear it? Yeah, I mean, of course, it sort of comes back to what I always say is that, you know, it's sort of the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more that hasn't been shared and which provides a better idea of that theory. And, you know, obviously I do have a theory. And when will we hear it? Well, I'm sort of hoping that by the end of sort of this run of five episodes or whatever it works out to be, that at the end of that, you know, I'll give you my theory of my opinion of what I think's happened based on all the information. But until then, I won't. And a lot of people have asked me why I didn't do my usual sort of breakdown at the end of the season of my theory. And there are a number of reasons why. You know, to do with sort of the case and things that were going on, and so I didn't, but I will eventually. Thanks, Tim. Okay, Sonia, hi. Gut feelings are very accurate. Could you tell me who set your internal alarm bells off when interviewing them for this season? I'd be very interested to know. I know it isn't proof of anything, blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah. You know, yeah, that's probably something that I can't really share. I mean, obviously, I do have feelings every time I meet people, and internal alarm bells have definitely gone off at times. But, you know, it's not something I'm going to share at this stage. Maybe down the line a bit further, because, you know, things are still unfolding. And yeah. Martin, have you or DT reached out to each other, or do you know if DT is using your podcast in his upcoming review? So I assume you're referring to David Tamahedi. I won't comment on this too much again, but let's just say that his legal team are aware of the podcast and are keeping themselves up to date on what's going on. Thanks, Martin. Marie, why do you think the media have been quiet on these developments? You look at the likes of Hedley Thomas's achievements all via podcast. Are they being gagged by New Zealand police? Well, I suppose we're starting to see the media come out a bit more now. You know, that TV interview I did yesterday. So we may see more. In terms of Hedley Thomas, I speak to Hedley, and he's a good guy. And I think a bit of perspective there is that I'm an independent journalist who operates out of my own office. Hedley Thomas works for The Australian, Australia's largest newspaper. So anything Hedley's doing is funded by The Australian and is going to be in The Australian. So, you know, naturally that's a huge platform. It would be the equivalent if I worked for the New Zealand Herald. Well, anything I would be doing would be front page news. So some perspective there on Hedley's work, which is great work. You know, when I started my podcast, Hedley was that bar that I sort of held myself up to and you know, and still do. But I don't think the media are being gagged by New Zealand police, but I mean, there's no doubt that they're hand in hand in many aspects. I think that, you know, the media here are just quite careful about what they say. Thank you. Carol, if you're relaying all your leads to police, why do you think they're not being more active about following up on your investigations? Do you have any theories? You know, I don't relay all my leads to police. It's straight, as simple as that. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I put most of the important stuff in the podcast. I mean, obviously there's more going on, but they don't want me calling them up every day with every different random lead. That's just not something that they're going to want. If I had something that was absolutely locked in concrete, then, you know, I would get in touch with them. But things are still developing. And at this point, they obviously have an ongoing case with Tamahedi's team. And yeah. And the thing is, you have to remember with the police too, is that it's not their prerogative to necessarily tell me what they're up to. They may be following things up. I don't know. They could have phones tapped. They could be following people. They could be doing all kinds of stuff that I'm not aware of. And they don't need to tell me that. And we're probably better off that they don't from their point of view sometimes. So, you know, you just don't know what they're doing. You can't always assume the worst. And do I have any theories? Not quite sure what you're saying there for the whole case. Yeah, I do, but I'll refer to what I said before. It'll come out eventually. Thanks, Carol. Simon, can you please have a bit of a gander in the swamp across the road from the Taikato farm? There is a big waterway area swamp over there, and it would be great to have a look in there at some point. I know there are rumors of things being in there, and, you know, again, I'll say searches are not always so easy. I mean, you're talking whether it's private property or public property or whatever, and, you know, the podcast has grown a lot and it's quite a big deal now. So if I say to someone, hey, we want to do a search, it's like, oh, you know, shit, this is going to be, could be a serious thing. And, you know, people can be a bit hesitant. You know, so it's not as easy as just, you can't just like roll up and just start searching somewhere. But, you know, if there's some genuine evidence that, that points in the direction of that swamp, you know, I'd definitely have a look or have a chat to Rick and see if that would be okay. You know, and I'll just add that in the past, Rick has been really good. Last time he said he was more than happy for us to search through areas. Whether that still remains the same, I'm not sure. Thanks, Simon. Christiana, has the use of cadaver dogs in the search for Heidi been considered? Okay, yeah, this is a question that I really need to answer. A lot of people ask this question, and of course it's been considered. It was one of the very first considerations. But cadaver dogs in New Zealand, it is no, you know, you can't just go out and hire a cadaver dog. The cadaver dogs in New Zealand are run by New Zealand police. You can't just get a cadaver dog. And then there's the other angle as well, that you have different types of cadaver dogs based on different things. So a standard cadaver dog, for example, would be looking for maybe a body that's still decomposing, or, you know, a dead body has been in a spot. But my understanding is that when you're looking at only skeletal remains from, obviously, 3 decades ago, that's a very specific type of cadaver dog, which is beyond rare worldwide, you know, and certainly not something that I'm aware of that is available in New Zealand. So unfortunately, you know, cadaver dogs aren't sort of just the, you know, the magic bullet that we can just click our fingers and get. But hey, I mean, if the police were willing, I mean, at the end of the day, if the police thought that there needed to be a cadaver dog, they'd be in charge of that, you know, not us. Thanks, Christiana. But I hope that answers that question, that, yeah, cadaver dogs being used is very unlikely unless the police are doing it. Maybe in conjunction with me, who knows. Thanks, Christiana. Okay, Tony. I feel like all the series have been really intense and super condensed with information, and I wonder if you and those around you have ever felt too mentally and emotionally immersed in the process of what you do. And I was wondering how you decompress. Is it like Ashley telling you to get off your devices, or you drag yourself to step away for a time? Yeah, I mean, it is so intense. You know, for the last 6 months, this has been my life, and it's from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, you're showering. It's just constantly your brain's ticking over everything, every little angle. And yeah, it can be insanely mentally draining. And to decompress, you know, yeah, I used to, you know, probably drink too much. That would be my thing. You know, at the end of the day, I'd sit down and have a drink, and that would be good. But, you know, recently I've sort of got myself out of that habit. And the best thing for me is running. You know, I will leave the office and go for a run, and that's when I do some of my best thinking, and that really helps me sort of just relieve that stress. As Ashley literally telling you to get off your devices, you know, I'm not, it's probably the other way around. I'm not a device person. I don't have Facebook on my phone. Well, obviously I use my phone, but not like that. It's more for me, I end up stuck in the office in front of my computer. Thanks for the question. George, are there any plans to release what you've done already as a documentary, Netflix perhaps? Yeah, I won't say too much here, but it is in the works. I'll say that. It's already well advanced. Okay, next question. Always wondered about your... Oh, this is George again. Okay, oh, there's a few here from George. I guess we'll just do them all. Always wondered about your safety and those helping you as the brave few that have chosen to speak up. How does it feel to be wandering through sites connected to the missing couple? So safety, you know, has been a real concern for, you know, a number of people, including my family. But, you know, it's just something you sort of have to sort of mitigate in the ways you can. And when you're wandering through sites connecting to Heidi in a barn in the case, you know, it can be sort of an eerie feeling at times, you know, sort of, you know, at Urban's memorial site. And sometimes you sort of, you flash back to what, you know, what would have transpired there, you know, all those years ago. And, you know, it does, you know, it does elicit some emotion for sure. But I don't feel unsafe in those areas today. You've stated multiple times that for various reasons, we, the listeners, only receive a sliver of information related to the case in the podcast. It's a lot of content on the cutting room floor. Do you see a time when all of this information becomes available to view, read, listen? Yeah, so when I refer to, you know, you guys only hear sort of 10% and a lot of it ends up on the cutting room floor, the reason is not because, you know, it wasn't good enough to be in the podcast. The reason is it can't be in the podcast because so many witnesses don't want to speak publicly for fear of their own safety, which is the main one in this case. And that's why it can't be shared. You know, I'd love to. If I could share it all, it would be amazing, but I can't. So most of that stuff will never be heard publicly until someday, maybe that they might change their mind. Or it really is mainly around safety. You've been speaking to multiple people that may have crucial information regarding the whereabouts of Heidi's body and what happened and who was responsible. Does your internal BS meter on a scale of 1 to 10 ever register a reading of 11? It has one time. And, you know, certainly oftentimes when I'm interviewing someone, they might say something that I might know is probably not right. But I like to let people speak and just, you know, see what they say. And oftentimes they might dig themselves a hole, you know, or not. But, you know, I let people speak. But, yeah, without a doubt, the bullshit meter is active constantly. And again, you know, just go back that when you hear things in the podcast, that's only a chunk of the interview. It's not the whole thing. And, yeah. Have you made contact with any family of the Swedish couple that have passed or have they reached out to you regarding the project? So yeah, I've been in contact with one family member, just through social media. And, you know, for me, I know there's probably people that think, oh, they should be involved and so on. But I actually sort of thought the opposite to a degree because, you know, this is a story. There's been probably so many journalists look at it over the years. And I didn't want to just be another one of these people that dredges something up and gets hopes up for nothing. You know, the way I see it, I was like, well, if I get somewhere with this, then, you know, then we can look to make that connection. But I did make some connection. And, you know, they are listening to the podcast. And I suppose I would say that it's sort of, they're just sort of like cautious optimism. Hopefully something might happen. And, you know, I think they appreciate what's being done. But they just said that they would like to stay back out of it. They don't want to be involved. You know, honestly, like journalists and stuff will just jump all over them if they do start getting involved. Thank you for that, George. Okay, next one, Leah. My partner and I have metal detectors and spend 50% of our time in Hahe. It is a place. Do you think we would be safe wandering the bush detecting for Heidi, or are there seedy underbelly types making it unsafe? Yeah, one thing I'd say is be careful wandering in the bush, especially in that area. There are old mine shafts and stuff all over the place that, you know, it is quite dangerous from that point of view. There are also, you know, people are growing weed and stuff up through that bush, maybe not like they once were. And, you know, you do have to be a bit wary. And also there's private property and stuff around. But yeah, I mean, it's New Zealand native bush. If it's dock land, you can go wandering in there. But I'd say be careful. But I don't think you need to be too worried about the actual people that are wandering around out there today. Things are a bit different now. Thanks, Leah. Renee, do David Tamahedi and David Turner actually look similar? Like associates can't tell them apart. Have you been able to yourself or another person analyze photos of both of them? So, yeah, I mean, they look similar, but they're not identical. I've seen photos, I have photos that are not public, like, you know, that aren't on your Facebook page or anything, of both of them from the era. And they certainly look similar, but they're not identical. From a distance, you know, maybe 10 or 20 yards or something like that, yeah, for sure. You know, if you were someone who was IDing that person later on, you know, say 6 weeks later, definitely you could make that mistake without a doubt. But I don't think it's the kind of thing where their friends would be making that mistake. But, you know, they look definitely similar. If you're looking from the point of view of someone that was trying to ID, say, a suspect that they had seen 2 months earlier, you know, that would be where a problem would arise. Thanks, Renee. Next question, Ra. My question is you, Ryan. If you could restart this Finding Heidi journey, what would you change to start it off with? Would you do a prolonged investigation first off before release? So would I change anything to start off with? You know, I think the thing about my podcast that's different is that I take you on the investigation with me. And it's normally sort of what I say is that it won't always be perfect. I mean, that's a different type of podcast. If I went and did a whole investigation and then put it together in one tidy package, so that's a different kind of podcast altogether. And that is still something that can be done, but it's just, I don't know, I kind of like the idea of you of going along and you find things out sort of as I do, and we go through that process together. And I think that's what makes it enjoyable to follow along. And I mean, I don't know, I'll put that out to you guys. Do you like that kind of thing? I mean, that's kind of what I like to listen to, and that's sort of the why I do it the way I do. Yeah. And the other reason too is that it's through the podcast and the listeners, that's where all the leads come from. If I'm doing an investigation first and then releasing, well, then how are people going to know to come forward? You know, that's all of the people that have come forward, more or less, or a lot of them, you know, they are people that have come forward through the podcast. I mean, aside from Darren and some of those earlier ones who I went out and found them. So it's the power of the platform. That's the key. Thanks, Ra. Penelope, can Ryan please provide his theory on what he thinks may have happened to Heidi? Again, I'll refer to earlier that I will eventually, but I won't right now. Justine, biggest red herring / time waster. I think we all have an opinion on who could have given the most useful info given their proximity to relevant players, but has padded out their comments with fanciful stories. Blah, 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 given. Oh, how pissed off are you with all this sort of BS? Yeah, I mean, like, I wouldn't say it's like pissed, but there's no doubt that I think someone might have said it in one of the earlier comments or something, or, you know, that the truth is in this mix somewhere. And there's a lot of bullshit and stuff that's all floating around in there, and we're having to sort of sieve through that. And I know, I do sometimes just think, man, I wish people would just say the truth. Everyone, you know, everyone's got some little element that they're protecting for themselves, you know. And yeah, it can be really frustrating at times, really frustrating. You know, but and there's also that passage of time. Sometimes maybe it's not BS, maybe they just can't quite remember. But yeah, I know people, you know, people have a lot of skin in the game in this. You know, you're talking about a double homicide. There's a lot involved, and you know, it's, you don't want to pass judgment too quick on what someone's willing to say and not willing to say. But yeah, I mean, hey, of course, sometimes I just wish everyone would just say the truth. Penelope, oh, another question. Ben, did he ever email or contact Ryan with information or apologize for being such a, yeah. Nope, never did. Have no idea what his deal is. Really frustrating, actually. I don't know. You know, but just strange that he was messaging other people that from this group, you know, I don't know, just strange. I have had a couple of people reach out to tell me a bit more about him, but it's nothing dodgy there. I think he just maybe thinks that, I don't know, he had some big piece of information and he didn't want to give it to me. Maybe I might benefit from it, or I don't know. I can't answer it, but it's annoying because I spent hours in really thick bush looking for that thing, and I would have just liked to see it just to know if it's relevant. He could have just sent me a picture with no GPS coordinates and I could have just looked at that, but no, some people. Okay, Jennifer, I'm curious about the sightings of Heidi where there were signs she was being held against her will, i.e. her hand being held entering the pub or being led by the elbow. Surely she could have been frozen with fear, but I'm interested in hearing from an expert on why she didn't make some sign to alert others that she needed help. The pub scene in particular haunts me. It was a public space and there were two men there that could have helped. Yeah, I mean, that's an idea. I could potentially get a psychologist on that could explain this, but I will just say, without saying too much, that, you know, Heidi may have potentially been witness to or knew of something that had taken place that had just put her in complete shock. And, you know, shock is very real, where you just almost just can't respond. And that's definitely a real thing, as crazy as it might seem. And everyone's a bit different in how they might react. But yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that there's multiple sightings that all sort of describe the same thing. And I think we could just safely say at this point that Heidi was in shock. Thanks, Jennifer. Jesse, what was Darren Lindsay's response to the James Turner interview? I wouldn't know, because Darren won't pick my calls up or respond to me, and he hasn't for a while. And I'd love to speak to Darren for sure. But yeah, I mean, I'll also add Darren's wife is very sick at the moment as well. And so, you know, he's got his own battles going on. So yeah. Due to that, I've sort of just had to leave him be a little bit, but I'd love to hear from him if he was willing to reach out off the record, of course. Next person. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce this name. Nice? I don't know. Have you found Heidi? No. Next question. Deb, has Ryan looked at the Kawau Island theory? If not, why not? It seemed a positive sighting. I assume here you're referring to Ian Wishart's book. You know, I haven't, because, I don't know, frankly to me it's insulting to even assume that Heidi would be sort of some kind of willing participant and going off like that. I mean, I think from memory, I'm just trying to remember what she was like, carrying a pack or something. And the person that, where this leak came from, was someone who was an avid follower of Investigate magazine. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure. It's not something I've looked into because, you know, I have evidence that points at things that are not connected to that, but I don't know. And I mean, this podcast has been pretty far and wide. And I think if someone out there has information related to the Kawau Island theory, and basically this theory, from my understanding, was these people thought they saw Heidi being with a pack on, with another man with a pack on, in the bush on Kawau Island, which is an island in the Bay of Islands of New Zealand. And yeah, I don't know, but I think the family of Heidi's family were extremely like upset about even the suggestion that Heidi might be going along with something like that. It's one thing to sort of be in shock and be like led around, but it's sort of another thing to be carrying a pack. And yeah, I don't know. I think that's just seems a bit ridiculous to me. Brendan, hi Ryan. Snapperhead mentioned in that forum that Urban fought for his life and they finished him off with a stab to the back of the neck with a circus knife. Then after that, it was found pathology says he had a knife. I think you'll find that post was made only a couple years ago, and it's been common knowledge about the next to Urban's skeleton for a long time. I did ask Darren about this and about this post, this forum thing, and yeah, he said, at the end of the day, he was just sort of filling in the blanks that he thought, And yeah, so sort of speculating. Brooke, have you managed to corroborate Tamahiri and Bear being in the same jail together at the same time? I haven't yet, but that is on my list of things to do. Victoria, there is a thread of truth through all the evidence you've uncovered so far. How close are you to being confident on where that thread starts and finishes and what it says? Yeah, and I mean, that's kind of like I just was saying earlier that, you know, somewhere in this big pile of shit, which is all these different witness statements, and somewhere in there is the truth. The truth's not outside of that, it's in there, but it's hard to see at the moment. But I would say that there are things that you guys don't know yet, witnesses that I've kept to myself at this point that have narrowed that scope a lot. And I'm getting pretty confident that I have a pretty good idea of sort of what took place. But I will say, you know, it's still really difficult. And we'll probably never have the real truth of this unless someone's willing to come clean. But at this point, I don't see that happening. Paula, has Heidi or Urban's family been in touch? I hope they're comforted by your efforts. Finding Heidi, though, so much. Yeah, like I said before, I've spoken to a Parkinen. I won't say what Parkinen, but one a few times, and they're listening with some hope. Natalie, in your opinion as a trained lawyer, how confident are you that circumstantial evidence can lead to the truth of what really happened? And if presented to the police, would the weight of your evidence mean they had to investigate it? I would say that my answer to this would be that I'm one person, you know, and I've been able to find what I've been able to find. If the police wanted to, and they said, hey, this guy must be onto something here, let's throw all of our police resources into this, I think that they would be able to find a circumstantial case there, and I think they could probably find more. That's not going to happen, though. I'm going to tell you that right now. The other thing, too, is actual direct evidence that would be long gone. So I think building a circumstantial case after 34 years would be difficult, although we did recently see that in the Red Fox Tavern. Two men there who say they're innocent, and I believe they are innocent in prison, just my opinion. So it does happen. I think realistically, the only way that the police are going to have to reinvestigate anything is if I can find Heidi in the place that she shouldn't be. If I can find Heidi in a place that's not up near Crosby's clearing, because obviously I don't believe she's up there, then they would have to, surely, because it would mean the whole narrative's incorrect. Thanks, Natalie. Lois, has anybody talked to Pat, Donald Turner's mother, and David Turner's wife? I'll just add again that there are many, many people I've spoken to that you're not aware of yet, and I can't reveal that who I've spoken to. The people that, let me just say that by the end of the podcast, the people that you're going to hear from, you will hear from, and the people that you will never hear from, you won't have. It's sort of as simple as that. I'm sorry, it's not probably the answer you want, but yeah, it's just the way it is. Anit, will Ryan be following up on the story about Heidi being buried on the farm? Buried at the farm on Prakawai Quarry Road, formerly managed by Gary Spinks, and if not, why not? News to me. I've never heard that one. Buried on the farm, formerly managed by Gary Spinks, if not, why not? Yeah, don't know that one. No one's ever told me about that. I will add that Gary Spinks did reach out to me a few weeks back, and obviously had listened to the podcast or heard about it, and wanted to be clear that he never owned a white Subaru. But I think we now know that from what James Turner told us, that the Turners owned a white Subaru. So that explains the other one. I don't think it was Gary Spinks's. I don't think he probably has any involvement. I think that was probably just something Spud said just to, I don't know, maybe throw the trail off, or I'm not sure. or it could be nothing at all. But yeah, I'm not sure if there's something to do with Gary Spinks and someone being buried there, then hey, reach out. But I've never heard of it. Tyree, how does Ryan keep these cases in perspective for his own Wairua to remain light? Or does he barrel on and repair later? Seems like dealing with some people and facets of cases could really etch into your energy. Yeah, I mean, I kind of just barrel on, really. I don't really have time to, to try and, you know, fix myself. But, you know, there's certainly times when you just, it's all a bit overwhelming, you know. But like I said, I've sort of go for a run and those kind of things. But yeah, I'm tired, you know, I'm really tired. And yeah, it can be hard some days just trying to just keep that energy up because it is really taxing. But yeah, I don't really have any real strategy, to be honest. Thanks, Tyree. Sarah, have you spoken to Ange, the blonde girlfriend at Batch, and possibly Crosby's sighting? As I remember a documentary years ago by Brian Bruce mentioning the sighting also, but cannot find it anywhere through any means now. I had a phone call with David Turner relatively recently, and Ange was there in the background shouting. So she's not going to be speaking to me anytime soon. And I'm not aware of any mention of the Batch or anything to do with that in any other documentaries ever. So that would be news to me if it is. So yeah, not sure about that one. And then you said, do you think collectively information like this documentary is being hidden from the public by government, police, etc.? If you mean my documentary, no, I don't think so.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The car recovered by police, where is it now? And was it forensically tested for blood, etc.? That Heidi and her Barnes position were in it. Did the actual vehicle identification get confirmed? I mean, again, you have to remember that, you know, I'm not the police. I can tell you it was forensically tested for blood. There was no blood in that car. But, you know, this is before the days of DNA or anything, so there wouldn't be no DNA, but they did test the car for blood. And did the vehicle identification, you know, I'll say this in terms of the car, that the police knew something wasn't right with that car, is my opinion. And someone actually shared something on this group, actually, which Ashley showed me a while ago, about an article they dug up saying the police had actually flown a person from the South Island to come up just to check, yep, those were the same tyres that I sold to the Swedes, you know, when they were on their trip. And that person sort of put this forward as evidence that, well, I mean, that's definitely the Swedes' car. To me, that actually says the exact opposite. You know, if it was as simple as the police just finding the Swede's car, you know, and, oh, yep, that's their car, it's got their gear in it, why would you need to go to such an effort that you would fly a person from the other end of the country just to check the tires? It's because they knew something about that car just didn't seem right. You know, it was just off. So much so they even flew a person to check tires. And whether the cars were switched or not, I think damn well the police knew something wasn't quite right, you know. And like I said, unless the police have actual evidence that Heidi and her barn did that paintwork. I mean, if you look in the pictures, it's like they've painted around the wheel arcs and those black squares on the back. Why would you do that? To me, that looks like maybe you'd be trying to cover up some rust or something. And when I looked on, if you look on the photos of Heidi and her barn's car from when they were on their trip of New Zealand, those wheel arcs and at the back of the car, it's perfectly clean. There's no rust that I can see. Did they paint that on, or is it a different car? And then, of course, you've got the issue with the keys and, you know, the thing with, I don't know, I'm not sure. It's a tough one with that car, isn't it? But I think that we can say that now that we know there definitely were two white Subarus, that that changes a lot. You need to really go back through and think about everything with that in mind. In episode 16, James Turner clearly states being the mayor of the town. Yeah, I think when you refer to, that was sort of his nickname, and being known to police. And Bob Carty saying that he didn't know them. Yeah, that's odd. I can't quite explain that. Can't quite explain it. Yeah, I can't answer that question. I mean, I don't know if he's trying to hide something or not. But when I spoke to Bob, he, even as we went on in the conversation, he would pause and think, like, say, you know, like, shit, I'm just trying to think who you're talking about. Maybe his memory's just failing him, or who knows. But yeah, that is a real anomaly to me too. Don't know. Thanks, Sarah. Next one. Paul. Has there been fingerprint checks done on Heidi's wallet found at the jam tins, given what we know? Might clear up one little question. Well, I know they did check fingerprints. Whether they ran them through the whole database or not, I'm not sure. I remember that there was a fingerprint that was unknown. It would be interesting to know whose that might be. But, you know, were those fingerprints run through a whole database, or were they just run to cross-check to see if they were David Tamahedi's? I don't have the answer to that. Would love to know, though. Thanks, Paul. Kate. I imagine the police feel their somewhat dubious/questionable means were justified by the end being a conviction. Even if that did significantly reduce the chances of Heidi being found and maybe others walking free. Do you think the police really did stuff it up and Heidi probably would have been found by now? Or do you think they did the best they could with what they had at the time? Yeah, so I think, I don't think they did the best they could, but, you know, we have to have some perspective here of how huge this case was. You know, it was an international case. I mean, Interpol were involved, you know, not in the investigation per se, but there's a lot of pressure. And after, God, I mean, how many weeks? They were going nowhere after a couple months, you know, until they stumbled across Tamahedi. You know, they really had nothing. And yeah, the public pressure was huge. I think they felt they had the right man. I think they genuinely believed it. And I don't know the evidence that came forward at that time. You know, I'm not sure. I don't have access to all those files. But I know that stuff came forward in the years following, no doubt about that, that was ignored for sure. I mean, I have people, anecdotal evidence from witnesses who said they went to police and tried to tell them certain things and were just ignored, basically. But that was after Tamahedi was convicted. I don't know how much they had of the truth of this thing during the actual investigation. A lot more I'll explain about all of this, that by the end of these 5 episodes, I'm going to reveal a lot to you. Thank you for that, Kate. Felicity, have you filmed enough of the investigation to make a good lengthy doc? Oh, right. Yep. So, yep, there is a documentary in the works, and it will be big. Sky, you mentioned holding on to so much information yourself, as you believe there's more to hear before you release all the previous cut parts, as well as to protect yourself. Is there a particular person or persons you're waiting for or re-interviewing for their responses before releasing the important stuff to listeners? Or will it likely come to the last episode and we'll get to hear all of the tough? Yeah, it's going to be that latter one. It will come to that sort of that last episode. And, you know, I'll make sure that there's no holds barred in that last episode. You'll hear everything that's out there that's willing to be, that I'm willing to say. You know, I'll add with this is that I'll always, if there's new leads that come forward, I'm always going to look at them and in future, but I can't keep this podcast going on this season forever. There has to be an end point at some stage. And, you know, I plan that's going to be after these five episodes. But I think what I'm going to show you is going to narrow down a lot of this stuff. And I think, yes, answer a lot more of your questions than I can right now. Thanks, Sky. Raywin, there's a thread of truth through all the evidence you've uncovered so far. Evidentially, it's too long a time to connect people back to the other people with a likelihood of prosecution. So like you've said, it's always about finding Heidi. So unless you either uncover remains or the people firsthand involved confess to the crime, how likely, in your opinion, is this able to happen? Are you referring to the likelihood of prosecution? I think the likelihood of prosecution in this case is close to zero. I don't really think the police have any interest in that. I'd almost say it's zero. They are not going to have any interest in that. They're probably interested in if I can find Heidi for sure. But, I mean, they're not going to, unless someone were to come forward and confess, which is not going to happen, then there's no chance of a prosecution. Thanks, Rowan. That's just my opinion, though, of course. You know, my opinion only. Okay, Lindy. Can we have a section for the most stupid question? Sure. I nominate, I can't find the episode on Acast. Could someone help me? Oh, man, I get this question. Like, people message me this every day. It drives me mental, and not necessarily because of people asking the question, but clearly the Acast thing and the way it is working is not clear enough. And just to remind you that the subscription and all of that stuff through Acast, that's nothing to do with me. You know, that's their sort of system. I don't have any technical input to that whatsoever. I've never been through that subscription process. Actually, maybe I did do it once, but I didn't have a problem with it. But I do understand that a lot of people, you know, maybe from the older generation or whatever, it can be really tricky to figure out, obviously, because people have problems with it, you know. And honestly, I've reached out to them a bunch of times about it, and who knows, maybe they might improve it at some point. You know, I'd like to see an app or something, like a well-made app would be much, much better. But, you know, let's see if that ever happens. And another, this Lindy as well, is it? How's your family, mate? You either have a very supportive wife or a very pissed off one. But seriously, be good to understand how you guys support each other in such an intense project like this. I think you're a hero, but I have a feeling your wife is too. Yeah, I mean, I've got a supportive wife, unless I'm trying to record audio for long extended periods of time. Everything needs to be very quiet. No, I mean, she's good. And when I started it, sort of, you know, I remember when I started this podcast, and it was really, you know, I would be working all day at the time. You know, we'd been doing property and stuff, and I was doing some plastering on the side, just, you know, to sort of make ends meet a bit. And so I'd plaster all day. Then I'd come home and I'd be making the podcast. I'd be up till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning doing it. Then I'd go work the next day and do the same thing. And that was just totally on my own at that point. You know, it was just a one-man thing. But, you know, in the last while, I think especially as the Facebook group has grown so much and, you know, Ashley's kind of become more a part of that with, you know, the admins, you know, and Corey and Anna as well. And, you know, that's kind of become a job in itself. And so, of course, you know, she's super supportive of that and everything. And, you know, obviously I need to have someone to talk to about the case, and she's always willing to listen and has some really good input as well. Of course, she is also a hero too. And just a reminder, we have a 6-month-old child. So from the start of this investigation was basically when we had our child. And so I'm not only tired from having to deal with the investigation, but also, you know, if you have a kid, you understand what that's like. Although he's pretty good. I think we've been pretty lucky, from what I understand. Thanks, Lindy. Amy, have you tried to speak with Darren Lindsay off the record? Yeah, so I'd love to, but not at this point. And like I said, Darren's sort of going through his own, he's got some issues with it in his own life. And so, you know, sort of leave him be at the moment. Russell, what do you think the motive for the murders was? Yeah, I mean, it's not something I'm going to talk about right now. Again, I'll say that by the end, you will know what I think. By the end, you'll have the final pieces so that you'll all understand a lot more. Thanks, Russell. Raywin, have police gone silent on you as you are getting closer, and why are your OIAs getting buried? So OIA is Official Information Act request, which if you're in the States or something might be a Freedom of Information Act request. The police haven't necessarily gone silent. It was at the beginning of the investigation, that was when I took Barry to meet them, because at that time I thought, wow, this is pretty important. And they took it seriously, you know, they interviewed him at length and so on. But aside from that, they've never reached out to me at any point, so it's not like they've become silent, less silent or more or whatever. They never reach out to me whatsoever. So yeah, and why are your OIAs getting buried? Well, they'll say that it's because of the ongoing case, you know, and the appeal of David Tamahiti. But let me say this, is that this is a problem with the New Zealand system. There's many, many problems with the New Zealand legal system and many legal systems. But so disclosure is something, you know, a legal term, which means it's sort of, if new evidence comes forward in a case, for example, the defense should have the right to disclosure, which is that they should be given that evidence, especially if it could relate to the potential guilt or innocence of their client. But the problem, and what we'll say is that Donald Turner's statement that obviously was made to police in the mid-90s is obviously pretty important, because now, given what we know, there are a lot of corroborating witnesses and evidence that supports obviously what he said. And I think we can kind of read between the lines of what he probably said. But though that statement, from my understanding, has never been disclosed to David Tamahiti's legal team. Because the gatekeeper to the disclosure and who decides what is important is the police. The police decide if a new piece of information is relevant or important to be passed on to the defense, which is clearly a massive conflict of interest, but that's how it works. And so obviously they've not deemed it important to pass that statement on, or this whole story that they've known about for a long time. And I think, so I made that Official Information Act request, and I know that they're sort of hiding behind the current appeal, and you know, and I went to the ombudsman, which in New Zealand is kind of, it's a person that you go to above the police, and that's still gotten nowhere at the moment. I think they know that if that statement gets out, and if I got hold of it, or maybe Tamahiti's defense team got hold of it, it could cause real problems for them. And I imagine, it's just again just my opinion, of course, you know, I can't speak for the police, but I imagine that they'll be trying to hold off on that stuff until after his appeal is over and done and dusted. And then it'll be like, oh, you can have whatever you want now. But I'd be imagining they don't really want that stuff out. And sometimes from their point of view, they might think, well, if it's not concrete enough, we don't want it out, you know? But I think we all know that it clearly is important. And it explains what's the one thing in this case that never made sense, and the police could not explain how Urban's body ended up where it was. The seemingly random place up there. But we all know now it's not a random place, is it? And Donald's statement explains why that cat showed up in that location. But yeah, I could go on that. But anyway, thanks, Rowan. Okay, Angela. I would like to know if there are any other known to police and possibly locals murderers that were in the area at the same time and who were also associating with the Turner brothers at the Taikato farm, i.e. some individual that we don't even know of yet. Are all the players currently identified and no new suspects coming up at this stage? I suppose I can say there are no new persons of interest that are going to be introduced. Probably simple as that, but unless someone new comes forward. But right at this stage, everyone that I believe is involved has been named. And the final question. Oh, I feel like I've got through a lot of questions quickly. Probably been talking fast. This is from Rachel. Still wondering who the blonde guy was that appeared with Tamahiri at the river and outside the courthouse. Yes, so it's interesting, this one. Christine said that she sort of didn't know who this person was, but in one of her original statements, it does actually name that person. Yeah, but she forgot that she must have said that at that point. I'm not sure, but there is a statement where the name is not redacted. So I'm pretty confident I know who that person is. Yeah, I really won't say too much more than that. But, you know, still, there's a lot of murkiness and around that whole thing. I will say that. Okay, so let's get into some email questions here now. This is one from Claudia. The podcast is fantastic. Thank you very much, Claudia. Tamahiri's appeal is being heard in Wellington at the Court of Appeal on Tuesday, the 28th of November, and Wednesday, 29th of November, 2023. Question one is, are you going to attend? And question two is any information you've uncovered, i.e. witnesses, etc., that you know is being used in the appeal? Am I going to attend? You know, I hadn't planned on it, but now that you've said that, is that something that, you know, there's different courts sometimes, you know, that public can attend and even media can potentially record. I might actually think about doing that. It could be an interesting bonus thing to cover that to some extent. You know, I'll add that I felt it was important for me to keep a distance between myself and David Tamahiri, because you can imagine what would happen if I interviewed David Tamahiri and then it just so happened that a couple of weeks later I found Heidi. What would the police say in that situation? You know, I think we know damn well they would say, oh, well, he must have told you where she was. So, you know, I've made a point of, you know, holding off from that side of things. And look, I'm not saying David Tamahiri's innocent or guilty right now. I'm not talking about that. But let's say if he wasn't, then that would be a problem. So, you know, but, you know, going to court, that's a bit different. I might actually consider that. That could be, let me know if you think that's something that you want me to cover. I could see if I could get permission to take some audio in there. Could be awesome. So has any information you've uncovered is being used? Like I said, I know that Tamahiri's legal team are following the podcast keenly. Naturally, they're interested. But yeah, it's really tough. Like when you think, you know, I'm not Murray Gibson's his lawyer, and you know, he's been for a long time. And you know, it's hard, like when you're going through appeal processes and, you know, this is something that's been going on for a long time, and to suddenly change tack completely, and, you know, that could almost, it could be worse than just sticking to sort of the status quo and focusing on, you know, whatever their case might be, miscarriage of justice due to other things. I don't know. I haven't spoken to Murray in this regard or anything. I have no idea what he's doing. Who knows? Maybe he might say there's new evidence that's come forward. I'm not sure. I really am not sure. But, you know, it will be interesting. And, you know, maybe I will go down and check that out, actually. It just says, love your work. The case is fascinating. As a fellow lawyer, I really appreciate this. Well, thank you very much, Claudia. It's always nice to hear other people legally trained that are listening to the podcast, and that's some nice feedback for me. Okay, next one here from Kay. Have you found any links between Heidi and Urban, Jordan, Sarah Neath, and Bear's 4x4 crash into the motorbike on Bush Road? Yeah, I think what Kay's referring to here is a number of, obviously, Jordan Bedori, which was season one of Guilt. He was murdered in Paidoa. Heidi and Urban. Sarah Neath, that's an interesting case. The girl that went missing, presumed murdered, and her car was never found. There's an investigation going on in that case, but I'm not aware of any connection to my cases, and from my understanding off the top of my head, I feel like they know who's responsible for that, but that they just haven't had the evidence to be able to get him. Or else they actually, maybe they did get him and he's got out. I don't know, because I can't quite remember. Maybe he actually did do time for it, but they want to find her body. No, interesting one though, but I think it is being looked into, but I don't know of any connection with Jordan's case to this. Remember, Jordan wasn't murdered until 2012. I don't know if that's connected to this. I have other leads in Jordan's case that I won't speak about now, but I don't believe David Turner's connected to it. Yeah, okay, next question from Barbs and Greg. Do you have the strongest gut feeling that you know who the murderer is? I'm guessing if you did, you wouldn't say, but I'm curious if you'd even hint. Thanks for the amazing podcast. Yes, I do, and no, I won't. Thank you very much, Barbs. Probably not the answer you were asking for, but okay. And finally, the question here from Corey. Hi, Ryan. My question is, with all the information that you've gathered from interviews and witnesses, what piece of information blew your mind the most? Man, yeah, that's a good question. I'm just thinking, because this case, man, there's been some sort of wild stuff. I suppose, you know.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Because when I started this, right, I had no idea about the truth of this case. And, you know, when I met Darren Old and he told me, you know, what he saw and all these details, I'll admit that initially I was skeptical because, you know, it was a big story. I suppose when I realized that the message, when I realized that the person who would had sent this message to this journalist some years ago referred to said dad. Like, when I realized then that that person sending that message must have been one of the Turner family, that was, yeah, that was a big deal because, yeah, I realized then that that person sending that message wasn't Darren. It was someone else. And so immediately it was someone else corroborating the same story. And then I suppose when I also met Christine and she showed me the messages from Donald saying that, you know, he believed his brother was responsible or at least involved in this, that whole sequence of events, I found, you know, it was pretty massive. And I mean, at the end of the day, like, we don't have proof right now that his brother is responsible, but, you know, we've got multiple people placing him there let's just say we don't have all the answers there yet, but that was probably the bit that blew my mind the most. You know, I've got to say, even just when I met James recently and he didn't really have a lot to add, but he did tell me about the bull bars, and that was light bulb moment as well there. If you start thinking about the bull bars and what that means, and I guess the fact that they did own a white Subaru station wagon, that is pretty massive if you really start thinking about that. Yeah, there's just a couple things. There's been a lot of them, you know, but those are the ones that stand out, I think. When I realized that those messages were not from Darren, that they were actually from Donald, and it was corroborating that whole story. And then, of course, the other part of that that blew my mind in a bad way was when I discovered that Donald was dead and he'd only recently died. That whole sequence of events was pretty wild. Thanks, Corey. So that will do it for the questions today. Thank you so much for all those questions. And, you know, I say, look, I know it's hard. You're all trying to sort of, you're trying to piece this thing together and you don't have all the bits to the puzzle, but, you know, you're doing well. And it's hard. Not to speculate. And when you're trying to find those answers, and, you know, I would say that, you know, you can go back through, there's some stuff recently that's come out, you know, if you go back through James's thing and you go back through some of the old stuff, and I can tell you that you can piece together more of the truth of this thing from what is already out there. But I would say you need to, you need to have your bullshit radar going, but just pick out the important things, the things that you think, okay, this is something I can rely on. And you know, I think you can piece together an idea. And I think when eventually I do explain it to you, I think you're going to go, ah, right, of course, that makes perfect sense now. But until the next episode, so I'll get an episode out next week, a proper episode. And we're going to start this final road to the finish, and it's going to be wild. It's going to be wild. And, you know, thanks for all your support. And as usual, if there's anyone out there that has any information, and I will say, I know there are people out there that have those pieces to this puzzle that I need, that have been told things over the years that can really help, you know, help finish this off. Put this thing to bed. And what I want to say is you can contact me, you know, through the email brevitystudiosnz@gmail.com, and I can assure you of anonymity. Your name will never be out there unless you want it to. You know, this is about Heidi's Waidua, which is, you know, her spirit. You know, like James said, and it's right, you know, that her spirit needs to be put to rest. And, you know, if you believe in that kind of thing, then I think, you know, we could all agree on that same thing. You know, and these last episodes, you know, this is sort of a last call, you know, to let's do the right thing. People out there, locals, that have those final bits of the puzzle, I'm really appealing to you to come forward with those final pieces. And I can assure you of your safety to get this thing over the line. And so we can find Heidi. And like I said from the beginning, it's not about finding out who's guilty or innocent. I think the chance of any prosecution of any other person that may be involved is probably zero. It's just about finding Heidi. And that's really all I care about. So yeah, thanks everyone. And I hope you're having a great day wherever you are. Oh, and if you're interested in the interview I did on the AM show, the TV show, I will put the link in the description. There's no new bombshell stuff there, but you know, it's just good to see that extra exposure. And one other thing, we're going to be releasing a run of limited edition t-shirts, Finding Heidi shirts. And, you know, the purpose of this is to help, you know, fund these final sort of searches. They're very real costs to this. You know, even last time, you know, the guys covered their own gas, but there are other costs that add up. And, you know, and it's just to help cover those costs, really. And I will say, too, that, you know, there have been some people recently, and I'm not going to name them, but implying that, you know, that I'm sort of fabricating this whole story to try and make money. And there couldn't be anything more sort of disrespectful and insulting to insinuate. It really shows these people that don't know me and who I am. I started this whole podcast never to make a single dollar. I invested thousands of my own dollars into it before it ever made a dollar. I didn't even turn advertising on for the first year because I just had no interest in that kind of thing. And I mean, the reality is though, you know, now the podcast does make income, but that literally goes to making the investigation happen. You know, if I didn't have income coming in, then I mean, this would all be over. I mean, I couldn't do it forever without any income, but so those shirts are going to be on sale through our website soon. And the website's actually getting rebuilt by Jacob from Meteor Street. And I'll explain more about that soon. But you'll be able to buy the shirts for a limited period of time. And we will be shipping these worldwide. And I will add that, you know, we don't make much money on the shirts. You know, no one's getting rich by any means. But, you know, it can help raise a little bit of money. But mainly it gets people out there with shirts and you can support the course. And I'll let you know in the next episode when those are going to be up. So thanks again and talk to you soon.